I'll leave the book with you overnight, and tomorrow morning I'll come back, and if you still don't want to take the book off, I said, I'm happy to take it back from you. Uh-huh. And he said, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's a good enough reason for me to have the book. I went back next morning, and I could tell from the look of his face what he was about to say to me.
Mm.
He said, you know, he said, I have many books, as I told you yesterday afternoon. I have many books in my library on the law, on the parables of Jesus. But I have never even seen a book that has moved me so much as this book, Christ's Object Lessons. Mm. And as a result, he bought the book.
The Lineage Journey Podcast, unscripted conversations that aim to help you on the journey of discovering your lineage. Join us as we take a deeper look into past lineage episodes and see the lessons we can learn for today.
Hi there, my name's Adam Ramden. I'm here with Lineage Journey Podcast. Lineage Journey is a ministry that seeks to help people understand their spiritual identity as we look at lessons from the past, see how they're relevant today and how they can guide us in our future. In our podcast, we like to do interviews with experts on history. And today, I've got an expert on history with me, Dr. Alan Lindsay. I'm down here in Australia. We're actually here in Sunnyside, which is the home Ellen White lived in for most of her time here in Australia. But a little bit of background about yourself, where you come from, maybe what you did during your working years and so on.
Well, I was born in Sydney, Australia, many years ago it is now, and became an Adventist when I was about 13 or 14. I had been a member of the Church of Christ at that time. And so after going to high school in Sydney, I went to Avondale College, which is our Adventist college here in Australia. I studied to get a BA in theology and ministry. And after graduating and marrying, getting married just after graduating, my wife and I went to New Zealand, and we worked there for some 6 or 7 years. Our 4 children were born there, and we enjoyed thoroughly our work in New Zealand.
Mm.
And then we returned. I wanted to do some more education in education. So I attended a college and got a degree in education and teaching. Then I was appointed, as soon as I graduated actually, to come to Avondale as a teacher, which I did in 1970. And for the next 31 years, I guess, I stayed at Avondale, had a brief stay with a trip overseas to do my doctoral degree at Andrews University. And then I finalised my work in the working for the church in 2001 and have been retired. But for the last 10 years before that, I was the director of this Ellen White Research Centre. And that was a wonderful experience and certainly built up my confidence in the ministry of Ellen White and her blessings to the church.
And you also produced a series of videos that I watched when I was a kid.
Oh, yes. Yes, that'll be Keepers of the Flame,
Keepers
Adam.
Of the Flame, yeah.
Yes, I produced that, wrote the script for it. I had never I'd never stood in front of a video camera before.
Wow, so you learned on your feet.
And I learned a lot, about what to do and what not to do. That series, it's been a great blessing to the church.
And it has
I've been
been
very thrilled
has
about
been
that.
Has been a great blessing, yeah.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about Ellen White, primarily her work here in Australia.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, you served as the director of the White Estate for a number of years here in Australia.
Yes.
Now, how much do you think Australia as a country benefited from having Ellen White live and work here for the time she did, as opposed to maybe other countries in Europe or around the world that never had that benefit of the prophet living there?
Yes, Adam. Ellen White came to Australia in 1891. And she left in 1900. She was here, therefore, for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the only other country that she lived in outside of her home country, which of course was the United States, was Europe, on the countries of Europe. Mm. She was there for 2 years in 1885 to 1887 before she came to Australia. But I've often thought, you know, she'd been in Europe for 2 years, the many countries that are in Europe, and she certainly kind of ministered and spoke. She went to England and certainly some of the countries of Europe. And yet she came to Australia and stayed here for 9 years.
Mm.
That was, I think, certainly to meet some of the needs that the Lord had shown her. The work in Australia had begun in 1885. That's
it was,
6 years before.
Church,
And so considering her role as a messenger of the Lord, as a prophet, if we like to use that word too, she was used to, that was her role, to give instruction, to give guidance, to show the people to whom she was talking about the love of Christ, which was central to her ministry. She certainly felt that, and because people were aware in Australia that that was her role, they felt that her coming to Australia to open up the work here in more ways than just one, as I'll mention, was certainly something that would be a blessing to the church here. And as a result of her coming, you know, she established Avondale. Now, we're sitting here today very close to Avondale because Avondale College, which has now just recently been named Avondale University, that she founded in a way that I'll maybe talk about a little bit later on. But she also had it got to do with the Sydney Adventist Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That's the largest private hospital in New South Wales.
Wow.
And it has a very good name. It's located in Sydney. So she was much involved in that. She established a very significant, to those of us in Australia, a health foods industry.
Sanitarium.
The Sanitarium Health Food Company, as it has been called.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly she had something to do with that, of course, and that broke out, I think, as a result of the message of health that she was given to give to the church way back in the early 1860s, that we should have a message of health. It was important what we ate and how we lived. And so she developed had an influence on as the health food industry was established. And she wrote, of course, a number of books here.
Hmm.
I think there are about five major books that she wrote while she was in Australia that have been a great blessing to the church, not only to the Australian church,
but the world church
as well. That's certainly true. I was always interested to read that she didn't want to come to Australia. She thought she had other work to do. But 9 years later, she didn't want to leave Australia.
Yeah, I read that. I remember.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was something special.
She liked it.
Yeah, true.
So Australia at the time was a young church, you mentioned. It was, 5 years? How many Adventists would have been here then, roughly?
Well, roughly, I think the three figure stays in my mind that she came in 1891 and the church... The first Adventist to come here as missionaries to Australia came in 1885. So she came 6 years after the first Adventist missionaries came to Australia, and they, of course, began to spread the message. And as a result, of course, they were they did a great, wonderful amount of good in a very short period of time, Adam. Mm. I've been amazed as to how quickly the church was established. But I do know that I've looked at some of the figures, and by 1886, they had a membership of 90.
Okay.
So that was only the year afterwards, and they had an evangelistic effort, of course, in Melbourne at the time to start it. And by 1888, there was a total membership of 266.
Okay.
So in about three or four years, it had jumped to a significant number. And those people, of course, were in the various states of Australia. In Australia, we have 6 states and 2 territories as far as our organisation is concerned and government. And the work began in Melbourne, of course, where they settled first when they came from America in 1885. Then 1886, which is just adjacent as a state to Victoria, to South Australia, 1886, to Tasmania. That's the little island to the south of Australia, 1889. Didn't come to New South Wales, which is where we are located at the moment, till 1890. And then the first work in Queensland, that's a very large state to the north of us, 1895. And then in Western Australia, that's a very probably the largest state in Australia, right over to the west where we are on the east, 1896. So by the late 1890s, a presence of Adventists had been established.
In all over.
Yeah, in all over.
It's still quite a small church at the time.
Yes, yes, very much so.
And
but they were, there was quite a few established, though they were small, but they very quickly grew. It was a very active church with the new church, as it were, of new Adventists and not much of a background of it in the families, you know, that became Adventists. But it certainly, it was a blessing for her to come, and she made that very evident very quickly after 1891.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, when you talk to different people that understand her coming down to Australia, sometimes there's a little bit of controversy about her coming. Some people say she was maybe forced out of America or pushed out or made to come. But I know she wrote quite a lot. And how do you understand the process of her leaving America?
Yeah.
And coming and arriving here?
Yes. It's interesting about this particular point, you know, because we might have assumed that Ellen White would be very glad to come to Australia. But, of course, we've got to remember that she was 64 years of age at the time,
for
an elderly lady under the having to come by ship, of course, and that took some time to cross from Los Angeles or
Quite
San Francisco to come to Sydney. And so it was a difficult decision for her. She certainly wasn't forced out by the church. Actually, the church in Australia had invited her to come. And because the Lord had shown her in vision some of the conditions in Australia and the difficulties the little church or the young church was experiencing, the Lord knew that they would greatly benefit from the counsel that she gave and the decisions she made about the school and the education and the health food work. So it was hard for her to make the final decision. However, we need to remember this, I think, that Ellen White had the habit of obeying, if I can use that word, the directions of the General Conference unless she had a clear no from the Lord.
Yeah, okay.
That was her philosophy, as it were. And because of that, she felt that she should come to Australia. And, of course, that was a wonderful decision for the work here in Australia.
I mean, yeah, you did mention a few, but maybe just to kind of flesh that out a bit more, like what aspects of church life today would you say is directly a result of her influence?
Yes, certainly, certainly. That is certainly true. While, and I should have mentioned this just a moment ago, that she wanted to complete the book on the life of Christ that we call today The Desire of Ages. And in 1891, she had been writing it slowly over the previous 20 years, but she wanted to complete the work of writing the book, and she felt that going to a new country and new Australians and meeting there, new churches to be given guidance, it was not going to work too well and as far as her assignment of completing The Desire of Ages. But she decided to come. And when we consider her work today in the church here in Australia and the benefits that came to her, to us, I believe, Adam, that the church is much, much better off. And with the institutions that were established in her day by her,
they're still last today.
They're still around today. I mean, the Avondale School, as I just said, the college here in Currumbong, it became a university recently, and therefore from her work in establishing the college was in 1897. The college first opened its doors. So 1897 down right through to 2024 is a fair period
long
of
legacy.
Time. And the college has continued since that, right throughout that time, has grown. And now it's an established educational institution in Australia. And so I think that, you know, given the vision to the opening Avondale, she guided, as I mentioned, the Sydney Sanitarium, and that institution has become well-renowned for its operations. It's dealing with cancer in a very advanced way.
It's a
real blessing in the area of health, our Sydney Sanitarium. And she helped to establish that health foods industry, and, of course, the books that she wrote here and the many letters that she was constantly writing. She didn't enjoy the best of health, particularly when she lived first in Victoria. The weather wasn't too good to her, but she got through that year and finally came here to build this house that we're sitting in today. She came here in 1895 and was 5 years in Avondale in this house in Currumbong. It's called Sunnyside. She gave it that name because of the sunshine that she experienced here. And it, from then on, she it was a real blessing to her.
Thank you, thank you. I mean, I've always been fascinated on my travels here by the one thing you mentioned, the sanitarium, and how, you know, that was set up during her time. And, you know, obviously the healthy foods have been a blessing, but also, you know, it's able to help support the work of the church.
And
it's been an amazing, unique blessing that Australia has that no other country in the world has.
Yeah, you're right. That's true.
You know? Well, thank you for that. We're going to just take a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to look at some of the, maybe the emphasis of some of the books that she wrote and some stories maybe that you have to share from her time here in Sunnyside and also in Australia. So those of you who are with us, stay with us. We'll be back in just a few moments after the break.
Lineage is a non-profit organization kept running by generous donors like you. Support us today on patreon.com/lineagejourney.
Years before Christ, a young child was born who would later lead the children of Israel out of Egypt to the Promised Land. During that journey, Moses was given the plans to build a portable temple which was used for more than 500 years. The services of this temple gave a vivid portrayal of the results and solution for sin, the redemptive love God had for his people. It pointed to the world's Redeemer, Jesus, the Messiah. Messiah's Mansion is a life-size replica of this temple. Come experience this sanctuary model as a tour guide expertly explains the history of the events that took place in the services long ago, how each step pointed to the work of the Messiah, and how the truths discovered there are relevant to our lives today.
For young people, the question always comes, what's next? Well, here's an idea, CORE. CORE is a discipleship and evangelism training program that runs for 9 months. In that short amount of time, you will learn everything you need to know to become an effective soul winner, as well as having the tools you will need to ensure that your walk with God remains rooted in Jesus Christ. They will teach you how to do and give Bible studies, how to do effective literature evangelism, give you tools to improve your mental health, and how to help others with their struggles too, how to minister to people through health evangelism. And you'll also learn how to engage in cross-cultural missions through a nearly 2-week mission trip, all in the context of a safe and healing community that is there to support you in your journey. For more information, go to coreevangelism.com.
Well, welcome back to our Lineage Journey podcast. I'm here with Dr. Alan Lindsay in the historic house of Sunnyside here in Currumbong, Australia, the home of Ellen White for about 5 years when she lived and worked here in Australia. And you've mentioned already that she wrote, I think it was 5 books, or completed 5 books while she was here in Australia. And one of them you mentioned was Desire of Ages. Do you have on the top of your head the other ones? Or
yes, certainly. The five books particularly that have really been not only a great influence here in Australia, but in the world, I believe, mm-hmm. as you look at what other people have thought of her writings. I've done it in England when I was visiting England, mm-hmm. and certainly in America and in other parts of the world. And if I could just mention the five books.
Yeah, sure.
The first one in 1892 was the very wonderful book Steps to Christ.
Mm.
It is a book filled with Christ. I mean, to Ellen White, Jesus was everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote that book, and it was published in 1892, the year after she arrived mm-hmm. here in Australia. Then a few years later, in 1896, she wrote a book. Well, it's interesting with this one. She was writing The Desire of Ages, is the book on the life of Christ. As I mentioned, I think earlier, she didn't want to leave America because she wanted to complete the book on the life of Christ, which she'd been working on for some 20 or 30 years. And finally, when she was putting the book together and it was finally published in 1898, it was such a big book that the brethren felt that it ought to be broken up into several small books.
Huh.
And so the first of these was the one that came out and was published in 1896. It's called Thoughts from the Mount of Blessing. That's a book, just her passing on to the church from the visions the Lord gave her, as all of her books were based upon the visions that she received from the Lord. It's a book on the Sermon on the Mount. And they separated what she was writing on the life of Jesus and said, look, let's take out all you've written on the Sermon on the Mount, since it was such an important sermon, and we'll put that in a book on its own, which they did in 1896. But that was still before Desire of Ages was written. And then after that was the book Christian Education. Now, that was published in 1893. And, of course, in the 1890s, Ellen White was urging upon the church for the first time that the church should run primary schools. And they started one here in Australia during the 1890s. And so to fill the gap and to give guidance and counsel to how to run a Christian school, she wrote a good deal about education. And so that book, which preceded the book that she wrote a couple of years after she went back to America, the book that we call today Education, which is a fascinating book, Adam, yes.
Oh.
And that was published a couple of years after she went back to America. So the Desire of the Ages was still being worked on in 1893 and 94-5 until 1898. And that was the year that in this house she completed The Desire of Ages and published it here from Australia, and she talks about receiving the first printed copy of Desire of Ages while she was living in Sunnyside. So this was important. And then the final book that was pulled out from the writings of Desire of Ages, because she was writing so much, was the book Christ's Object Lessons. That was in the year 1900, the year she left here. And that book, of course, is on all the parables that Jesus taught. Wonderful book. If I can just divert to an experience I had early in my experience, I was doing some colporting, selling books from door to door, and I was doing this to earn my way through Avondale, actually, at the time. And I was colporting in Brisbane, which is the capital city for Queensland, the state to the north of us. And as I went along the street, I can still remember coming to this home, and the man who came to the door quickly told me he was a Presbyterian minister. And began to sell the books that I had been given to sell. One was Christ's Object Lessons, and the other one was a children's story book. And when he looked at the book, and as I opened it up and talked a little bit about its contents, he said, look, no, really, I have so many books in my library about the parables of Jesus being a minister. He said, I really don't feel I have a need. And I'm sure it was the Holy Spirit that impressed me to say, look, I'll leave the book with you overnight, and tomorrow morning I'll come back, and if you still don't want to take the book, I said, I'd be happy to take it back from you. And he said, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's a good enough reason for me to have the book. I went back next morning and I could tell from the look on his face what he was about to say to me. He said, you know, he said, I have many books, as I told you yesterday afternoon. I have many books in my library on the parables of Jesus, but I have never even seen a book that has moved me so much as this book, Christ's Object Lessons. And as a result, he bought the book.
Oh, praise God.
And I've never forgotten that experience, on that book, Christ's Object Lessons. And then, of course, her book, The Desire of Ages, it's a wonderfully spiritual book. It's a Christ-centered book, as you would expect. And Ellen White saw so much, and I should have mentioned this earlier, that Ellen White wrote about more than 130 books that are available today over her name. That's a lot of books, lot of books for her to write, particularly when she never went to school beyond the age of nine because of an accident she had when she was a child. And so here are these 130 books that were that have blessed the church in so many areas of Christian living. And I think of those, the value of those books to the world church as such. And when I think of them today, that little book, Steps to Christ. You know, I've been just finishing reading the book, Steps to Christ. And I want to give you a little sample of a sentence she wrote in Steps to Christ that when you stop to think of what she's saying, it's a wonderful explanation of the gospel. And I want to read that to those of you who are listening, because on the page 62 of that book, she says this: if you give yourself to Christ and accept him as your Savior, then, sinful as your life may have been, for his sake, you are accounted righteous. Christ's character stands in place of your character, and you are accepted before God just as if you had not sinned. To me, that's one of the most wonderful sentences in that little book, Steps to Christ. She says many other wonderful things in that book. But when you think of it, sinful as your life may have been, Christ's character stands in place of yours, and you are accepted by God just as if you had not sinned.
It's a great book, doesn't it?
It's a wonderful book.
Yeah.
And so that was Steps to Christ. And as I said, the book Desire of Ages, but if I can tell you a little story about the Desire of Ages.
Is it true she finished the book or wrote some of it under the tree out there?
That's a little bit of a legend ways. I mean, she may well have done it. The trees out there are probably old enough to be here at the time. But certainly this was the place where she finished the book and the writings of Desire of Ages. And I remember reading, well, when I was the director for the Ellen White Center here, I read at the time that a librarian at the famous Library of Congress in America, and the Library of Congress, of course, is one of America's leading libraries, and he was given, they expect at that library to get a copy of every book that's printed
in America.
And he was asked one time, what's the most wonderful book you have in your library on the life of Christ? And he said, without hesitation, I would place it for spiritual application and uplifting Jesus, without hesitation, The Desire of Ages by Ellen White. Amen. And that book, of course, was a blessing to the church.
It has been
here in Australia.
I mean, of the books you've mentioned, you've got Steps to Christ, Christ's Object Lessons, Thoughts on the Matter of Blessing, Desire of Ages, and then you had
the
two education books.
Yeah.
Some would say that there was a shift in emphasis on her writings where she focused a lot on Christ and so on. And I've also heard some say that's kind of connected with the righteousness by faith message that was shared in Minneapolis. Do you see that connection and that shift, or was it?
Yes, I do, but I wouldn't like to assume that people understood me saying that she never uplifted Christ
of course,
before that time, because you know, from her first vision that she was given, which was in 1844, that's 40, 50 years before this, you know, from her writings in those early years, they were certainly much was talked about with Jesus.
Of course,
she knew Jesus intimately. But I think that in view of the emphasis that Wagoner and Jones and their leadership and discussion on the righteousness of Christ and their uplifting Jesus and how righteousness comes to us by faith, I think that there was a new and a refreshing new emphasis. I think that's probably a better word for me to say, on Jesus and our relationship with him established by faith when we make contact with Jesus and put our trust in him. And because of that, the Minneapolis conference in 1888, this led to a new and a very powerful emphasis on the centrality of Christ in the faith for the Adventist church. And therefore, that's why I think I'd agree with you, Adam, because in 1888 was the Minneapolis conference. What, 2-3 years after that, she comes to Australia, and the book she first publishes is Steps to Christ, in 1891. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the fact that Desire of Ages is released to the world in 1898, it is still during that decade that she was here in Australia.
Yeah.
And I think that it certainly would be true to say that not that she didn't talk about Jesus before that time, but the emphasis was certainly to the sinner, our Jesus is our righteousness received by faith.
Mm.
And that's why I think it's probably true to have that emphasis after Minneapolis.
Yeah. Do you have when we think about Ellen White here in Australia, do you have a favourite story from her time here in Australia, her as a person or just the story of her time here?
I think, Adam, because of my teaching at Avondale from 1970 to 2001, that's 31 years, it was a major time in my life. And the story of Ellen White's founding of the location for the college.
Okay.
It's a simple story, but one that has always inspired me as to an illustration of her role that can be seen in relating to the establishment of institutions. Particularly in 1894 and 95, the work of establishing in Australia a college for older young people to learn, particularly be trained for being missionaries in the church at that time, but giving them a general education at a college level or beyond high school, that became of great interest to Ellen White.
Mm.
And so as a result, during those years, Ellen White began to talk more about establishing a school somewhere away from the country, in the country, away from the cities of the time. And there was much searching for land in those 2 years suitable for establishing such a college to be built, both for the training of their young people for being missionaries in the South Pacific Islands, as well as giving them a good general education that they might feel they need. Now, eventually, as they began to search and they looked at a lot of land up the coast of New South Wales particularly, they found a large area, a block of 1,500 acres here in the little village, the little small town of Currumbong. And that's where Adam and I are giving this podcast this afternoon, because this is Currumbong. And today it's grown, but in those days it was a very small,
little
village, as it were. Many of its inhabitants were people who had just been sent out to Australia as convicts that released because the early days of Australia was a penal colony that was established when they first came to Australia in 1788. And so here was this little town, and 1,500 acres was on sale in Currumbong, and that's the little place about 100 kilometres, if I can put it that way, if for your understanding, north of Sydney in the state of New South Wales. Now, the story that I'd like to share with you that has always impressed me begins this way, that before she visited the land, when they were still considering whether they should buy it or not, the Lord gave her a dream. And in this dream, she was walking across the 1,500-acre block of land, and she came across a clearing. There were trees growing nearby, but this was just a little clearing. And in the clearing, she saw a plough had ploughed a furrow in the ground, about 2 metres, would be about that, or 280 centimetres probably in length, but she saw no plough. It was just that the soil had been opened up and this plough, this furrow was there. And she saw, to her surprise, two men who were leaders in the educational work, even at the young time for the church. And they were standing near this furrow, and she heard them saying, in a dream, "This is not good land. It is poor soil. Mm. We come from Iowa." Now, Iowa is, they were Americans. Iowa is a state over in America that was known for its good soil.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at this soil that had been opened up and said, "No, this is not good land. The soil is poor." And then in her dream, she heard the voice of an angel. And the angel said, "False witness has been born about this land.
Mm-hmm.
If properly worked, it will bring forth bountifully." Now, not long after her dream, she was in only a few days, if I remember rightly, she was invited to inspect the land in reality.
Mm-hmm.
And when walking across the land, to her great surprise, she came across a clearing. And in the middle of the clearing, there was the furrow ploughed by somebody to reveal the soil that had been turned up.
Hmm.
And standing by the furrow in reality this time were the same two men she had seen in her dream, and they were saying the same words that she heard in her dream. They were discussing the quality of the soil, saying it was poor soil for a college where the students were to learn agricultural skills.
Mm.
Well, this dream confirmed the site for the school, at least in Ellen White's mind. There were some who still opposed the site because it was a long way from Sydney, and they wondered whether, if the soil is so poor as they thought, is that the place to buy and to build rather a school? But in the years that followed, Adam, many stories were told of sitting out around this college, many tables all laden with the agricultural products that had been grown on the school's ground.
Mm.
And certainly that dream that she was given.
She was right.
Was very right. Very
was false
right,
witness.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And of course now it's a university and it has trained many hundreds of young people in those intervening years. The motto of the college, of the university now is still the same: for a greater vision of world needs.
Amen.
And that's still here and still a great blessing to the church. Yeah.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. It's a fascinating story how, you know, the Lord revealed to her that it was good land, and the inspectors or other people said it wasn't, and thankfully the brethren listened to her rather than the inspectors.
Yes.
When we think of Ellen White, you know, oftentimes we hear of, you know, people hear about her writings, or they might hear a quote in church, and you know, sometimes she's a very abstract person, or we don't even know anything about her at all. What could you say something about her on a personal or family level from her as a person, or even from her time here, about who she was as a person?
Yeah, I think that's an important question, Adam, because, you know, it's no good a person writing lots of wonderful books if you find that the person is a bit of a pain in the neck as it were, and not really living up to what she's writing about.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the writings were very uplifting and very high up in what the Lord was asking his people to be, the kind of person to be. And so I think it's a very important question to think about her as a person. She married a young minister. I should point this out, that his name was James White.
Mm.
And that's why she's generally known as Ellen White. They had four children together, all boys. Unfortunately, and it was a tragedy, she lost two of them in death, one at a very, very young age, just a few months old, and the other at the age of 16. And he was the sweet singer in the family, and she often mentions the loss that she feels of the loss of him at 16 years of age. But the remaining two boys became ministers, one earlier in his life. The other one had a bit of a wayward track to walk before he became a minister, but he was a great blessing to start the work among the American blacks.
In the South, with the Morning Star.
Edson White. But those who knew her as a mother, as a grandmother, as a friend, as a neighbour, as a counsellor, have left many accounts of the kind of person that she was. She was a wonderful speaker. She made a lot of friends wherever she went, particularly even among young people, which is interesting because you might think, and some would say it today, that if they imagine Ellen White's always telling people what to do and what not to do, it wouldn't turn them on to being a friend, particularly of her. But young people were attracted to her, and she was known as a loving, unselfish and very genuine person. You know, while I was working in the Ellen White Research Centre, I had access to all the letters that she had written in her life up to that time.
Wow.
And, of course, until her death, since she has passed away a long time ago. But I was there for 10 years. I had access to the correspondence, not only that she wrote, but that people wrote to her, and many other records of her life. She never claimed, and I think this is important, Adam, she never claimed to be a perfect person. She knew, and she was quite open in saying that she had her weaknesses, et cetera, that she had to wrestle with, like every other child of Adam. So she never claimed to be perfect, but she did. It was obvious to everybody who ever met her that she loved Jesus, and her greatest joy was in bringing people to Jesus as well. While I was working in the research centre for 10 years, I had a wonderful secretary. Her name was Marianne de Burgh. And she started during that 10-year period to show an interest in researching Ellen White's life at Sunnyside, particularly that during the five-year period she was living in this house. What was she like? What sort of a person was she like? And I would recommend to anybody, because I know you can't see me, but I can imagine that you are sometimes perhaps listening to this podcast, I'm holding in my hand a book that's called Stories from Sunnyside, Ellen White in Australia, 1891 to 1900. And this book is a real wonderful book. It's the only book.
Excellent.
You've got it?
Yeah, I do.
Well, you know that it gives a wonderful insight really into good. A wonderful lady.
Very well written. The style.
Very well written. Very
style
well written.
Of the author is excellent.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would recommend you to, if you're interested in the kind of person she was, it wasn't just her work as a prophet or as God's messenger. She was a wonderful neighbour when the children near her, when they were hospital in Currumbong and they took sick or they were involved in an accident, she would go along. In fact, let me tell you this story. Early when she started to move, when she first came to this house and her cooking, sometimes if she wanted it cooled, she and probably instructed her, the girl who did some of her cooking, would put the cooking outside for it to cool. But on a number of occasions, the people who had come as convicts from England would come to the house
take
and
the
find
food.
It and they would take the food. She did not say anything about that. All she did was that when some of the families that she suspected were involved, because she knew their character, they had an accident with a boy and no hospitals nearby until Newcastle. And she went along and healed the boy and brought him back to marvellous health.
Wow.
And the stealing stopped. And it was that says a lot to me about the kind of person
character,
she was, particularly as just a neighbour, regardless of her role as a prophet. And so I would recommend that book, Stories from Sunnyside, if you can get hold of it.
Okay.
Because it would be a blessing to you.
Thank you. So she was here from 91 till 1900. Now, What was the cause for her leaving? Because if I understand right, she quite liked it here and wanted to stay.
Yes, well, yes, the interesting thing is, I think I might have mentioned before, she didn't want to come, but she didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
She was, she writes in her writings that she would have been quite happy to stay on and die here in Australia, which says a lot.
Yeah, it does.
She enjoyed it. She loved this house. She called it Sunnyside because it was a sunny place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And she was very happy here in Australia, in spite of the challenges she had to make. But the Lord showed her in vision one night towards in about 1900, might have been, that the work of the church was going to face some real challenges in the 1900s, especially in the next decade.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lord therefore instructed her that she was to return. It wasn't her own decision, as it were, but because the Lord shared her with her the problems the church was going to face in the 1900s, the Lord said, it's time to return to your home. And from what we now look at and in the history of the church, during that first 10 years after she returned, the church did face some tremendous challenges.
Yeah.
Dr. Kellogg, he was promoting pantheism.
Mm-hmm.
There were other doctrinal issues on the daily.
Mm-hmm.
There are organisational issues, issues with Dr. Kellogg himself were among them, and she was there and was certainly a blessing to the church during that 10-year period.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're almost finished. Thank you for taking the time to be with us. But the last question, just a short one maybe. What's your favourite book of Ellen White and why? If you can.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked.
Maybe you just like all of them. I don't know.
Because that's a difficult question. I can't say I've read all 130 books by any means, but there have been certain books that have stood out in my experience, and I've already mentioned them to you on Adam, Steps to Christ and Desire of Ages.
Okay, your two favorites.
Those two books. I'm reading right now again through Desire of Ages and being greatly blessed by that book.
Mm.
I mean, it is such a wonderful book in what it says about Jesus. I should say something, I think, probably at this point. You know, some people misunderstand Ellen White and maybe some of the actions of some Adventists that her role was Adventists put above the Bible. Some charge her with false information that she claimed to have had by vision, when, of course, that never happened, never was true. And I'd just like to clarify to anybody who may be listening to this podcast that Ellen White was never used and has never been used as a source of doctrine
in our church,
for the church.
Yeah.
In other words, even though we talk about the fundamental beliefs that we have in her as a messenger of the Lord, she never wrote anything to clarify the meaning of doctrine or to declare, I should say, what she wanted to introduce to the church as a doctrine.
Yeah.
What her role was to confirm the Bible at every step. In the growth of the Adventist church, when it was developing the things it believed from the Bible, it was always from the Bible first. And the interesting thing is that from our history, when the church discovered Bible truth, as they were continually doing, supported by Bible, never by Ellen White, and her role was often given a vision after the church had established
it.
That certainly happened with some aspects of the sanctuary truth.
Mm-hmm.
We believe strongly in the sanctuary and the ongoing presence of Jesus in the heavenly sanctuary today, and the work that he's doing today. But the church studied the sanctuary truth, every aspect of it, first by studying for themselves the scriptures. Then after that, the Lord often gave a vision to confirm what they said was truth.
Amen.
And that's something important that I really feel that people need to understand as far as her writings
are concerned. The role of doctrine, Thank you. Well, thank you for taking the time to be here with us. Really appreciate you sharing from your insights as a teacher, professor, lecturer, and as previous director of the White Estate, and for your passion for Ellen White and her writings and her role in ministry in the church. Thank you for being with us and for blessing those who are listening. So those of you who have tuned in, thank you for watching or listening to this podcast, and we pray that it's been a blessing to you. This has been brought to you by Lineage Journey, which is a ministry that seeks to help people to help understand their identity and the link between the past, the present, and the future. For more information, you can go to www.lineagejourney.com, and you can find out more videos and podcasts and articles there. May God bless you, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode. Lineage Journey is supported by your generous donations. Did you know that you can donate on a monthly basis? Any amount, from $2 to $100 or whatever you decide, through patreon.com/lineagejourney. Your donations go towards the cost of producing our varied content, and we thank you for your support.